Radio Free Readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Welcome to the voice of the American Redoubt. This is John Jacob Schmidt. My name is your name too. If you're a God-fearing, liberty-loving patriot, thank you guys for tuning in. This is a special presentation this week because, as many of you know, I got in super late, much later than was previously scheduled on Sunday evening from a conference. It was an amazing time spent with other community leaders and patriot leaders, just working together to plan for the challenges ahead and networking with one another. And it was just it was a great time. I was supposed to be back into the heart of the American Redoubt much earlier, but that didn't happen. So what we're going to do is something a little bit different. I had Kay from Combat Studies Group on the line, and I just recorded an interview with him. And what I'm going to do is air that as a special presentation. So we have something for episode 17, 11? So I'll air that for you right here, right now, and share this with you, especially in light of some of this, some of these latest revelations about the CIA and some of their snooping and capabilities and things like that. So we're going to talk to a subject matter expert in that line of work and shed some light on some things and talk about solutions as well. Many of you guys have already heard of Kay. I've talked about him before. Many of you have attended his training. I hope you guys had a great weekend, and I hope you have a great week coming up. And I'll talk to you next Saturday on KTW. Thank you all for your prayers, your support, and your encouragement. And thank you all for being out there. This is Radio Free Redoubt. And now I will turn this over to the interview with Codename Kay. Okay, we've got our guest on the line. I told you guys we're going to be talking to Codename Kay from Combat Studies Group. He is, of course, a combat veteran. He's also the owner and instructor over there at Combat Studies Group and a former government, overseas government contractor and a wilderness medic. Kay, great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us today.
Always good to be here, man.
All right. Now, you and I were talking earlier in the week, and we probably, both of our email boxes blew up about the same time. This week, Julian Assange from WikiLeaks released some almost 9,000 documents that they're calling Vault 7, this Vault 7 release of CIA docs that are classified documents, many of them exposing TTPs, tactics, techniques, and procedures of the CIA and their espionage and electronic warfare world. And this is when I started getting people saying, oh my gosh, what are we going to do now? Signal's broke, it's hacked, should we switch to Wicker? You know, and this kind of stuff. So a lot of us just putting out fires. I think you would be the perfect one to be able to put a lot of this stuff in proper context.
Right. Yeah, it didn't take long. And, my phone was ringing, my email was filling up, and my various other communication methods were filling up with concerns and, hysteria, honestly.
Yeah.
About this. And, I can't help but kind of go back to the fact that, myself and several others have been putting this stuff out there for years, that basically your device can be compromised if you're using a closed source device. And that's really all they're saying on here, especially with regard to something like Signal or WhatsApp or some of these other encrypted applications. The encryption isn't broken, and I get so tired of hearing that from people.
Yeah.
Encryption, with very few exceptions, is sound. It is mathematically sound. It's not broken by anyone. And frankly, even if they could break it, why would they? There's so many easier ways to get around it. I mean, the human factor is always the first breaking point, you know, and we've discussed this before.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's much easier to socially engineer the password out of somebody or get their device to snoop on their password before they even, you know, get it into the application that they're using. And so this, it's, I don't want to say it's much ado about nothing. It is a big deal, but it's, you know, we knew that they were doing this.
Well, and that's my point, I guess, is when this stuff comes out, you can't act like you don't have a threat in the world. And then when you find this stuff out, act surprised. What this is nothing more than an affirmation, additional affirmation of what was already either known or suspected. So, you know, at this point, when you move forward on any electronic footprint in the Internet of Things, whether it's your cell phone tracking device or your activity on your laptop, on the Internet, and so many other things within the Internet of Things, that as long as you're using that, you cannot expect to be, you know, completely invulnerable.
Right.
So basically, let's put that to rest. Signal and these other types of very powerful encryption hasn't been hacked, broken. The apps themselves are not compromised. It's the devices. They're going through the devices. And several folks, Wired Magazine and several others, fortunately, have been addressing this, letting people know. But okay, so let's talk about that. Signal is still great and it's not broke, but it's your cell phone that is. It's your device that's the weak link. So where does that bring us? Are we still not to use it?
Well, and that's a tough nut to crack for a lot of people. You know, if you're an enthusiast, you could go out and get a handset and wipe it and build an operating system on their phone out of pure Android open source or Lineage OS or Replicant, or, you know, there's some options out there that are purely open source. And, you know, and as we've talked about before, open source is always a preferable option by virtue of the fact that it's auditable. You know, there's real transparency in the code there. There's not going to be something hidden in there like a government backdoor per se.
And why is that?
So that's always a good
for the folks.
And that's always a good starting point.
Yeah, this is new to a lot of folks. So when you say open source, what you mean is as opposed to being proprietary like Apple or Microsoft, you don't get to see the code. You don't know. There's no way of knowing if there is a backdoor in there. But with open source, you get this very large hacking community and other security advocates that are crawling all over this code. And organizations or groups, publications like the Wired Magazine, for example, they're going to make it known. They're going to be screaming all over the internet if something like that's found.
Right. Yeah, there's enormous entities out there that that are always scouring all these various codes. And, you know, some of them are just enthusiasts. Some of them, you know, are digital freedom fighters, so to speak. Some of them actually get paid to do it, you know, and there's independent code readers or hackers, if you will, that, you know, some of them make a living with bug bounties, meaning if they find a flaw or a zero day in a chunk of code that belongs to some, you know, organization, they will actually get a payday from finding that. So.
Wow.
There's a lot of different incentives out there.
Oh, that is great. That is really great. But you see, you can't rely on that when you're dealing with, say, Google or Microsoft. You have to pretty much assume that everything in there has got backdoors and malware, spyware, and everything else.
Right. Yeah. Basically, you know, Google, Microsoft, the usual offenders are telling you, trust us, wink, wink.
Yes.
And, you know, unfortunately, you can't do that. And the real reason for that is, in this era, your personal information, your data has become the predominant currency, if you will. It is the new gold.
Yeah.
There is so much value attached to just all the little benign details of your life. and that's why it gets traded behind your back and sometimes with your knowledge. But, you know, these data brokers move this stuff around and it can find its way into the hands of identity thieves or, you know, different criminal enterprises as well as state level entities that, you know, may not have your best interest at heart.
Okay, now there's a term that we're seeing thrown around here quite a bit lately, and that is zero-day or zero-day threats, zero-day vulnerabilities. Can you explain that?
So zero-day is just a simple way of explaining that identifying a flaw, an as-yet unidentified flaw in a piece of code that basically someone's going through the code and they are playing with it, they're manipulating it, and they find, oh, look, if I approach the code in this way or use it in this specific manner, it breaks this or it creates a vulnerability here.
Right.
And basically it's literally zero day. You no one up to that point has been aware of it. Now, whoever found this, you know, they've got a couple options. They can go alert the owner of that code. They could alert, you know, a media outlet such as Wired or Ars Technica, or they can broker that information. And some of this information, like going back to the DDI at the CIA, you know, some of this code and these hacks that they have, they weren't developed in-house. They weren't developed by the government per se, but they were purchased by data brokers that found some of these zero-day exploits.
So when we get we have multiple programs on our computers and we get the pop-up saying you have an update available. Click here to download the update. And sometimes we say, oh, I don't want that. I don't know what they're putting on there. But a lot of times it's in our best interest. It's an exploit that was found or a vulnerability that was discovered, and they've written a patch for it that would make you more secure and less vulnerable for somebody, you know, breaking in somewhere and getting access to information or something they shouldn't. So the zero day then is when an exploiter finds this, they exploit you before, let's say the managers of that software discover it and can patch it. That would be your zero day,
right?
Kind of a time window then where you're vulnerable before they've found it.
Yeah. And I should point out that, just because there's a zero day, let's say something like on a web browser. So let's say a particular web browser, they find a zero day on it. That doesn't necessarily mean that browser is going to be compromised and there's nothing you can do about it. It may need a certain set of circumstances. For example, it may need the ability to run JavaScript inside the browser, which is something that the end user can turn off or disable.
Mm.
And in most cases, you should have that off just because that's such a huge attack surface. So, you know, this is kind of goes back to the thing that we hear every couple of months. Tor is broken. You know, run for the hills. Tor is broken. Don't use it.
No kidding.
And that's just not the case. It's because, you know, there was an exploit somewhere or zero day or someone got arrested for, you know, doing something and they were somebody that had been targeted, you know, and you read the details of what actually happened, and no, you know, they didn't break Tor, quote unquote. And
right.
It's just like them throwing around that, you know, they broke the encryption of such and such. Yeah, that's not the case. There's a lot of misinformation and hysteria that goes along with these types of things.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been that way for decades. You know, I remember the German Enigma machine, you know, unbreakable. And then, it's not unbreakable. Actually, they did finally break it. But they actually didn't break. Is that right? The Enigma machine. The Enigma. Yeah. What it was a human source. It was a disgruntled worker in Berlin that actually sold the technology, you know, information of how it worked with the plates. And it was a human intelligence source leak. Without that, they would not have broken it on its own. And so it's the same thing even with modern, even way more advanced algorithms and encryption. It in and of itself is not breakable. It's being exploited from somewhere else.
Right.
So these platforms that we have, the Androids, the Microsoft you know, Windows platforms, and they're full of vulnerabilities. And you mentioned a word, attack surface, or a large attack surface, like with Java. And the more I learn about this, the more I learn how many what's currently referred to as, or commonly referred to as, attack surface. It is incredible how many different places that they, whoever they might be, whether it's hackers, whether it's government, whether it's, you know, some type of exploiter, can gain access to. So what is the average person? Well, actually, this is going to go two different ways in my mind. I know you provide a solution for this. Matter of fact, I use your laptop, the Sepio, on a daily basis now. It's my daily driver. It's just an amazing laptop. I'll let you talk a little bit about, you know, what you've done to harden that up. And you also have the phone and the tablets now as well. It's spendy. You have to really security. Well, it's not really that much more than the other stuff that you get off the shelf, but you have to be deliberate about being secure. And you're only going to be able to go so far with hardening up a Windows. But what advice would you have for someone that says, look, I don't need high speed advance, or it's out of my price range right now, or whatever. How can the average person harden up, take measures to harden what they have? Let's say they got a Windows 10. Maybe this is an impossible one to answer, but what can the average person do?
Well, that's a tough one. And you know, and my stance in class has always been, I'm not even going to attempt to try to tell you how to harden Windows 10, because I would, you know, and I don't want to offend anyone, but it's kind of a fool's errand.
Yeah.
Windows 10 is just so compromised. And then again, there's the fact that it's closed source code. So, you know, even if you did do some hardening to it, you don't know what's inside that code. So again, you're back to trusting Bill Gates's baby.
Yeah.
And you know, you could take your laptop and download an open source operating system, you know, based on BSD or Linux, and you know, install it. You know, get rid of your Windows, install that, and you know, there's definitely a learning curve there. It's a different system. It's come a long way over the years, though. It's actually pretty user friendly.
Yeah.
And it's going to meet your needs. It's going to allow you to surf the internet and watch movies and listen to music and print and you know, all those various things that we do. And I should point out, just because it's Linux, it's not hardened. It's not secure all by itself.
Right.
It is open source, so at least you know that the likelihood of it being backdoored is very much diminished. Depending on the Linux, it's definitely more security minded in how it's constructed. You know, they're very good about getting regular security updates, which are important for things like zero days. You know, it's not one of those things where you have to like come buy my product or buy someone else's secure product. If you want to roll your sleeves up and dig in, you certainly can do something like this yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I was speaking with some folks about this about a week ago, and I told them, you know, they said, what would you do right now? I can't get into Linux is way over my head. I can't even begin to jump in a project like that and learn that. I can't buy a ready-made machine that's, you know, with a lot of security stuff built into it. You know, what would you do? And I told them I would. And correct me if I'm wrong here, or add some additional guidance. I said I would go on Craigslist or a pawn shop. I'd pick up a Windows 7 machine if I couldn't go down to one of these any number of shops in pretty much any community where they build computers, and have them put Windows 7 on it, or get something from a pawn shop with Windows 7 on it, and then you know, start adding a lot of password protection programs and adding PGP encryption for my email, and start, you know, kind of harden it up as much as you can. But still, it depends on how vulnerable that you are, based on, you know, your assessment, your lifestyle, and things that you're involved in. You know, there's I'm interacting a lot more with people involved politically, and very controversial type of people that have received death threats and hacking attempts and things like this. And they're asking, what do I do? How do I keep my family safe? How do I keep people from tracking, you know, who I'm communicating with and things like that. Now, you know, I've got a, you know, I'm willing to go out and buy, you know, a computer and do with it what you want me to. What do you say to them?
Well, again, that's a tough one. If you're going to be non-compromising about it, then, you know, you definitely need to go the Linux route. Because, you know, at the end of the day, with a Mac system or with Windows, you still have to have that level of trust. You know, and especially with, you know, the people in the political spheres that, you know, are coming under attack or are receiving threats. You know, in movies, they always depict, you know, these shady characters going out and, you know, hiring hitmen to come after them. But what is much more likely, and something that is going on a lot right now, is they're going out and they're hiring digital hitmen, so to speak.
Yes.
These people that will, you know, hack their router in their house. They will hack their garage door, their key fob on their car. They will hack all these different aspects of their life. They'll get all their data, all their identity information, and they can really hurt someone with that. They can leverage them, especially if we're talking about politicians or people in positions of power.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they, I mean, those people, you know, probably more than most, you know, we all have to kind of, at the end of the day, create a threat matrix for ourselves, you know, whether we use Carver or, you know, whatever. We need to do a serious assessment of, you know, what is the actual threat that I might be facing?
Right.
And where could that threat actually grow to? You know, so for someone in that political sphere, that threat could definitely increase. It's going to be on a, you know, a curve. You know, someone like myself that is, you know, putting this information out there, eventually this is going to make me unpopular in certain circles. So,
sure.
You know, my threat matrix is, of course, going to climb. But I mean, that's the real starting point right there is doing that serious assessment.
Yeah, you're right. And it's going to be different for everyone. You know, you get the little old grandma that just wants to look at her grandchildren's birthday pictures on Facebook, and that's pretty much all she ever does with it. Obviously is going to fall into a completely different category than, you know, somebody that's very politically active or, you know, coming under in the crosshairs of the increasingly leftist, violent leftist type of organizations that are really trying to hurt people. But we're going to talk about we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, I want to talk about some of the solutions that you offer, and you've got some great training, and I've been through some of your training in the past, and you've added a lot more to it. So I'm looking forward to some of the training that you got coming up going on right now and coming up in the near future and through the rest of the year. So we'll talk about that. If you just sit tight real quick, we're here with Codename K from Combat Studies Group talking about electronic security, vulnerabilities, and what you can do about it. Here at the Voice of the American Redoubt, don't go away.
Thank you for tuning in to the Voice of the American Readout for this special presentation. Join us every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Pacific for the weekly John Jacob Schmidt Show, covering news and issues that affect all liberty-loving, God-fearing patriots. Broadcasting from the Free Zone, this is Radio Free Readout.
All right, we are back. If you're just joining us, we've got Codename K here with Combat Studies Group talking about electronic security measures and what you can do about it. Really, this is a matter of creating awareness. So, K, thanks for taking the time to be with us and go over this stuff.
Yeah, you bet.
Hey, now, during the break, we were talking about some of the vulnerabilities. You had a relative or an associate of one of your students that was sitting in the class, and this guy comes up. Let's talk about that with an iPad.
Yeah, so it was during one of my courses, and this older gentleman approaches me, and this was actually at a break, and he wasn't even a student. He was a relative of one of the students. And he approaches me with his iPad and says, "Hey, you know, can you take a look at this?" And you know, said, "Well, what's the problem?" And his iPad was locked, and it was, you know, requesting a fee of, I think it was $200, you know, to be delivered to, you know, whatever address. And it was just a classic case of ransomware. And yeah. It's funny because what we're seeing more and more of now is these small dollar figures. So instead of them going after a big firm and asking for $1 million, you know, to unlock their important data, they're just attacking average citizens. And so because they know they're going to kind of weigh it in their head, and they're just going to go pay the $200 to unlock their device because it's got their grandkids' pictures on it. It's got probably their banking info on it.
And, yes.
You know, who knows what else.
Absolutely.
And that stuff has value to us. I mean, you know, even if it's just sentimental value, that's value.
I was just doing some research on that just so the people understand the reality of this. In January 2016, they said they had 1 million – over a million, like 1.1 million cases of ransomware. And they said by the end of 2016, it had quadrupled, and they're expecting that to double in 2017. So, you know, you've got all of your important email contacts, or you're running a small business, you have, you know, your bookkeeping and stuff like that on there, and all of a sudden you get this page popping up saying your computer's been encrypted, it's locked down, and you need to wire $500 to this account here, or $200, or whatever it is, to be able to have access to your information. This is a huge problem.
Well, and the sad thing is that this is a growth industry. You know, it shouldn't be. You know, and so this kind of goes back to the argument of, you know, the little old lady that she has nothing to hide and just doesn't care and just wants to, you know, look at her grandkids' pictures on Facebook or whatever. She is a viable target as much as anyone else.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yes, and, she's got $100 or $200 she can get off of.
I'm sorry, you broke up there.
Oh, I was just saying, even the little old lady's got $100 or $200 that she could get off of. And
well, sure. And here's the thing. I mean, if she even bothers to call the local authorities and report this, what is the likelihood of any kind of, you know, noteworthy investigation being done?
Well,
with any kind of positive outcome. I mean,
exactly. They don't have the capabilities to deal with it.
Right.
The federal resources are the only ones that do. And what are they going to do with 1.2 million or 4.8 million cases of somebody tried to, you know, talking me out of $100, $200? It's going to go nowhere. So, you know, like you said, they're going to pay it. Or they just won't. And, you know, I've had people say that that's happened to them, and they just said, see you later.
Right.
Of course, that's, you know, that just goes into just practices and your discipline of, you know, backing your stuff up. You know, I have mixed feelings, mostly negative feelings, about the cloud, storing all your stuff on the cloud. And, you know, but that's basically anybody can back up their equipment or their laptops and devices. So if that does happen, but a lot of people don't,
right?
They don't back their stuff up.
And that's the logical answer. There is having good, regular, and the keyword encrypted backups,
right?
That are kept away from, you know, whatever device it is you're using, especially when you're traveling. You know, and we're seeing this, you know, boom and people going through customs now, and you know, the customs officials are demanding that they surrender their passwords and give up their devices. And we're talking Americans. We're not talking like the, you know, the guy that's clearly a jihadi walking into the U.S.
Right.
They're targeting, you know, journalists. They're targeting other government employees. They're targeting people that, you know, I think one guy was even a NASA scientist. And, you know, he's pleading with this, you know, ICE or customs agent saying, look, this isn't even my data. This belongs to NASA. I'm not supposed to give it to you, you
right.
know, and they threatened them. And it's, we're kind of caught in this vicious cycle now of, you know, it's like we're eating ourselves.
That's a really good way of putting it.
Yeah.
That's pretty much just another one of the ways that it was a democracy was defined by the founding fathers. You know, self-destructive and suicidal. And here we are.
Yeah.
But let's talk about some solutions for those who are willing and looking, and they're like, look, I will do whatever you tell me to do. Just tell me what to do. There are solutions out there that can really harden you as a target. And you've got some incredible training and products that deal with that, that I personally use and, you know, rely on. I mean, really, when I say rely on it, I do. And it's just a huge level of confidence that, that, you know, I can operate and deal with data and communications and correspondence. And that's a big weight taken off. So when right. somebody wants, when you say, I have a hardened Linux system, what do you do to keep people from running the other way?
Well, first off is, you know, I don't advertise a lot, but, you know, the few places I do advertise, I don't really capitalize on the Linux part because that, you know, people have a knee-jerk reaction of fleeing at that point.
Yeah.
You know, because they have visions of you having to type in terminal code to do anything. And, you know, that's just not the case anymore. It's point and click simple. It's arguably easier than running a Mac or Windows 10. And granted, that's what I've been running for many, many years, so I'm used to it. But I've seen a lot of people, you know, migrate onto this platform, and it doesn't take that long, and they're, you know, it's smooth sailing. You know, even with my system, which has a lot of you know, security built in, it's going to ask you a lot of passwords. It's going to kind of make sure you're doing the right thing as far as, you know, running your encryption.
Yeah.
And we got to kind of keep in mind that at the end of the day, there's very few guarantees in this world. And sure. technology is certainly no exception.
Exactly. And even more so when you're dealing with technology, you have to know that there are no guarantees. I mean, you know, you can pass paper notes written out with one-time pads, you know, meeting face-to-face. Now, if you're willing to go there, you can have, you know, the highest level security that you want and walk there and don't take any vehicles and pass any license plate readers, you know, and have no electronics with you. But the world that we're living in, right. you know, obviously, you know, I think we both describe this as, you know, the battlefield now for freedom is an electronic battlefield. And, you know, if you want to prevail in battle, you have to use the weapons that's appropriate for the situation. And our weapons are, you know, digital. They're electronic. They're ones and zeros. That's what we're firing back and forth. And so there's no guarantee on the battlefield. Even if you have superior weaponry, you can still get killed. But you know, on this battlefield, we want to heavily place the odds in our favor of survival and protection. So with this system, I know that you're always upgrading, like your Sepio, for example, the laptop, which is what I have. You just recently added another piece of protection against Stuxnet. Now, a lot of the stuff right. is new to me. I'm on a sharp learning curve. It was not easy for me to go from Windows for 25 years to Linux. Although it is point and click. It's I would say it's actually a lot like operating on a Mac system, the way mine's set up.
Right.
But there are definitely some little nuances, not just because it's Linux, but because it's a Sepio, because of the security features that are built into it, and you need to navigate around through that.
Right.
So for folks that are considering this move, I would say you have to be deliberate about your security and wanting it. And I always say, you know, when I give presentations, you can be as absolutely secure as the level of pain in the butt you're willing to put up with. And
right.
And the more secure you are, the more of a pain it is. But it is, you know, it is there, it's available, but there's things that I'm always learning, things I've not heard of before. Stuxnet, what is this, tied to, USBs?
Right. So the, and I've kind of I've incorporated a bigger module of learning module of this into the Ground Rod program, including some hands-on displays. Stuxnet was the name that the researchers that discovered this virus or this malware gave it. It was actually what we know now called Operation Olympic Games, and it appears to be a joint operation between our intelligence apparatus and the Israelis, and it was designed specifically to target the Iranian nuclear centrifuges and basically cause them to damage themselves in a rather severe way. But more importantly is how that this thing got transmitted. When we think of a thumb drive or a USB drive, you know, we think of it as the same way we think of a a blank CD or DVD or a hard drive that we can write data to. But what people need to realize is that inside that USB is a little microcontroller. Essentially, it has a little computer in it. When it's plugged into your computer or into a powered device, it receives power, wakes up, and it does something. Now, in the case of a thumb drive, it just tells the computer, hey, I'm Mr. Thumb Drive. I have, 4 gigs of space available for you to write to, and this is my name. But if you were to go and implant code in that microcontroller saying, hey, I'm not a thumb drive, I am a keyboard, and I also would like you to open up a terminal in the background and put this code in that terminal, which sends you to a website, which downloads some malicious code to your computer. You could go on and on and on with this. But as far as you know, all you did was just plug in, a thumb drive.
Right. So all the stuff's happening in the background and you're oblivious to it.
Right. Because when you plug in a thumb drive, all you see is the writable partition. All you see is the memory module. So you can virus scan it. You can format it, delete it, wipe it, study it. And you're never going to see that malware payload because it is on a completely different chip inside there.
On the firmware.
And you can see this if you get a cheap thumb drive and break it open, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about.
Huh.
So it was, and this is not something that, most people out there can access and write to these thumb drives. This has to be done at the factory or inside, a special lab at DDI or, at the TOA at the NSA.
And we're seeing some kind of disturbing partnerships form between the intelligence community and Silicon Valley, the digital industry. Huh.
Right. And, Samsung TVs, they're smart TVs. as soon as I saw that come out years ago, I cringed. Because I just knew this was going to turn into an Orwellian, TV that is watching you while you watch it. And that's exactly what it is. And in fact, Vizio, I think, did a big lawsuit against him just for that reason.
Wow.
So this goes back to that whole IoT, that Internet of Things. And that, now, admittedly, in our daily lives, we need a laptop to, conduct our business, to speak to people we know, to get the news, whatever, read our emails. So that is arguably an essential part of our life. And you could make the same argument for a phone. But outside of that, it really stops. Do you need a smart TV? Do you need a home thermostat that's connected to the internet? It doesn't end there now. It's ovens and refrigerators and,
yes.
All mention of appliances.
That's incredible. Okay, so let's talk about the Sepio here. It's pretty over the top as far as the levels of security that you put into this, but can you do that with a phone as well? I mean, I know you sell the phones, but that seems to be the worst vulnerability is our tracking devices. I mean, our cell phones.
Right. And I think we've talked about this before, that a phone is a difficult one because of its intended nature is that it has to talk to those towers constantly.
Yeah.
So right out of the gate, you've got that issue. So you've got a device that it fails to do what it was designed to do if you break that ability. So, why would we carry it around if you can't talk to the cell towers?
Right.
So that one's a tricky one. And then, the fact that inside a phone, you have two operating systems. You have the one that you actually see and interact with, and then you have what's called the baseband or the radio software. And that is locked down proprietary you know, there are no open source versions that I'm aware of. And again, because this has to work in conjunction with Verizon or AT&T or T-Mobile or whoever, you know, I doubt you're going to see an open source version.
Right.
So you got to kind of still, even with what I would call a safe phone, like my phone or maybe a black phone, or, you know, there's a couple out there. Yeah, don't think that that thing is completely secure and you're completely safe no matter what. You know, what I like to tell people on my phone is that I took away its ability to actively spy on you. So it's not listening to you. It's not phoning home secretly. It's not putting up ads and malware. You know, all that stuff is blocked or just completely ripped out of the system. You know, I eradicated all forms of Googleness, you know, and provided alternative app markets.
I hate Googleness.
And then, you know, yeah. And you know what cracks me up? What's their motto? Don't be evil.
Yeah, that's right.
Don't be evil. And I'm thinking, well, there's some irony for you.
And in the meantime, they say publicly now, if you don't have something you don't want somebody else reading, like us, you probably shouldn't be doing it. So I guess now they're in the business of helping us decide what is or isn't evil.
Right. Well, there's such a high level of collusion between, you know, a company like Google and the deep state.
Yes.
That, you know, and the same goes for Microsoft and all of those others. And you just can't trust them. You know, it's just right. That simple. And, you know, if you're one of those people that, man, you're just married to your iPhone and you just weren't really want to keep using that product, well, you know, more power to you, but just understand, you know, what goes along with that, you know.
Yes.
It will listen to you. It will spy on you, and it's not as secure as you think it might be. The whole thumbprint unlock thing that I'm seeing on phones, that's a horrible idea.
Yes, I agree. You're helping them build your biometric database in the process.
Well, I mean, we could look at this from a lot of different angles.
Yes.
Well, from the legal angle, most court cases have backed up the fact that you cannot be compelled to give up your passwords under the Fifth Amendment. Well, they do not transfer that same view to your fingerprints.
Correct.
So you can be compelled. And let's say I'm in maybe another part of the world where they're a little more
motivated.
They don't beat around the bush.
Persuasive.
Yeah, they're a little more motivated. The last thing I want is to incentivize them pulling parts of my body off to unlock my device.
Right.
You know, because at the end of the day, if I give someone my password, it's a decision that I made. I make the conscious decision to give up the password. They can't pull it out of me. They can't rip it off me. You know, I mean, yes, at some point they would probably break me and I would probably give it to them. But you know what I mean? There's just a difference there. But
yeah, very true. And now a lot of this, too, is an education process. And it's difficult to really be able to find a package where you can, first of all, learn about what's out there, what the vulnerabilities are, much less the solutions and how to implement solutions and plans. So let's talk about that. You've got some great training coming up, and you know, I've participated in. I had never heard of any type of training before. I found out about your ground rod course, and at the time, it was the ground rod primer, the basic level of learning what's out there, learning the tools that you can use to increase your personal security, your information, even private communicating and email, and just a lot to it. And now you've got the Ground Rod 2 course that I'll be taking this in April. I'm really looking forward to that. And, of course, we're going to be bringing you here in June, too, so into the American Redoubt. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about that. Talk about Ground Rod Primer. What you've done with that course and the things you've added to it, and then I'm real curious to hear about Ground Rod 2.
So the first Ground Rod was was essentially a way to take anybody off the street and, you know, in 2 days' time, get them up and running with all this stuff. So basically having them understand the threats out there at large and how they may, you know, fit into their actual threat matrix.
Right.
You know, and then offering solutions, you know, and I try to give a wide variety of solutions because some solutions fit, you know, different people in different ways. And I mean, you could take, you know, ground rod primer and be done with it. And I think you'd be on a pretty good footing. With ground rod two, I'm basically, you know, we're just expanding on a lot of the same concepts. We're digging deeper into them. We're bringing out some new stuff, some new information that's come out. You know, so there's kind of an update built into it as far as the threat, whether it's this latest, you know, WikiLeaks dump or the latest in ransomware and, you know, and what to do about it. And, you know, you'll start to do stuff like actually getting inside that terminal and getting comfortable with it and realizing it's really not that scary. You can do a lot of cool things with it.
Good.
So, and then of course, you know, ground rod three and four and the follow ons were the plan is to kind of gravitate more and more into, not necessarily more primitive trade craft, but more hands-on trade craft skills.
Good.
Actually getting out in the world and employing this stuff in a realistic setting.
Outstanding. That's going to be really good. That's where you can actually start implementing it, like almost kind of like a field exercise portion of it.
Right. Correct.
Yeah. Now, I will be bringing my Sepio. You have a system that you use for training that people can bring their own laptops, plug into, and be operating on a system that's similar to the Sepio, so they can actually start getting their hands on these tools, these anonymizing tools, these encryption, I guess what you might call darknet, you know, Tor and other covert messaging and correspondence type of tools. Would that be right?
Right. Yeah, I created basically it's a working live system that you know, you can. Yeah, you there?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's a live system that you can what?
It's a live system that has all the tools that we'll need for, you know, that we're going to explore in class. You know, your Tor system and the encryption apps and. And it is laid out in a fashion similar to the Sepio laptop, even though it's not necessarily hardened.
Yeah. Good. Good. Well, we're working on a course, you know, several. I know you're going to be, I'm looking at your schedule right now and you're all over the place. And, so this is really exciting to see more and more people take this seriously, willing to invest in the knowledge and even the equipment where they're able to. Taking the information from your course, I guess a lot of people are going to be wondering, I'll be learning all this stuff, but I don't have a Sepio. Will this be worth my time? What would you say to those folks that are looking for this knowledge and the tools, but they're, you know, here they are with a Windows 7.
Right. Well, you know, I think it's certainly a benefit. I mean, education always is. And let's face it, this subject matter is crucial to everyone right now. You know, whether they've reconciled that fact or not. And it affects the entire ecosystem, so to speak. The more people that are sending their emails with encryption, the better it is for everyone's strength and anonymity and privacy. Because now you're not a needle hiding in a haystack, you're a needle hiding in a stack of needles.
Yes. And that's another good, that's a really good point, because I've had people say, won't that raise flags if you use encryption? And, you know, my response has been, it crosses all boundaries, whether you're a business owner, whether you're a college student, whether you're a freedom fighter or a criminal or a security conscious minded person, or if you're politically active and there's, you know, concern about people threatening you, and just privacy advocates, people that just don't want to be spied on, which is a huge and growing portion of people that are using these types of tools. So it really has created a large sea of people that are using this, because you're using encrypted email isn't making somebody go, oh, we got a patriot here, we got a right wing extremist, you know, let's go kick their door in. It's not the case.
Right.
Yeah, this is good stuff. Man, I could just keep going on and on, but we're coming to the end of our time. But before I let you go, I've been following this show you're probably familiar with, Hunted on CBS.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a reality show.
Right.
They've got rules. There's things they must do. There's things they can't do, so on and so forth. But overall, what's your impression?
I've only seen a couple episodes of it. I don't actually have TV at the house, but it's, you know, from my perspective as somebody that kind of lives in that world, it's obviously a little frustrating because I just see them doing all the wrong things. And
and
I see the chasers, the hunters, the investigators, you know, slapping themselves on the back, you know, not because they did anything ingenious, but just they're just preying upon the failures and the expected failures of the people that they're hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of a little bit of a microcosm to how things really work. You know, you can really become your own worst enemy in those situations.
I agree.
And, you know, some of the people actually tried to employ things like burner phones, not fully understanding what the heck that means.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't think one of them did it right, but, you know, and there were some people there doing some clever things, and they were thinking outside the box, so to speak, and you know, that was encouraging.
Yeah, with a little bit of training.
But I tell you what, it really comes back to that human factor, because whether it's that show or whether it's real life, I mean, let's use the one-time pad as an example. This is what everybody reverts to anytime there's one of these WikiLeaks or something that causes us to lose faith in technology. Everyone starts hollering, you know, well, we got to go back to one-time pads. That's the only way to be sure.
Right.
Well, the problem is that history is full of incidences of one-time pads being broken. Now, when I say broken, do I mean one-time pad encryption was broken? No, that is widely accepted as being unbreakable.
Right.
But what's the big weak link there? It's the human piece, right?
Yeah, that's where it would be not broken, but compromised. And it's usually through human error or a failure to pay attention to detail, poor OPSEC practices. Those are the things that, you know, those are the failure points. From the Enigma machine, you know, all the way up to, you know, modern day. You know, these are really good points. I guess for Hunted, what I liked the most about it was it gave a visual representation, a very graphic, a brain imprinting demonstration of the consequences that you try to tell people in a podcast, or you write an article about it, or you teach it in a class, or give a presentation. But when they actually see the person getting busted and they see what you've been trying to hammer into them, I guess the visual impact of that makes it all come home for them. It creates brilliant discussion points and learning opportunities or teaching opportunities to point and say, see, that's what I was talking about. That right there is what I was talking about. And then they get it. So it's been a really good companion, I guess, for stuff that I've covered in the underground, going underground project, a series, and other things that I've covered. And I know that it's, you know, it's definitely been helpful as a teaching tool, I would say.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So, well, hey, brother, it was really good talking to you. I got to we're going to get rolling, but and I know you got training you're getting ready to prep for, so good luck with that. Godspeed, and just keep up the amazing work that what you're doing is a service that is much needed, very rare, and there's just not enough people helping folks, you know, bring their security up to this level. So thank you for everything you're doing.
Yeah. Thanks for spending some time with me. Appreciate it.
You bet. Now, before I drop you off here, get your information out there. How can people go to learn more, your website, how to find, you know, where training's going on in their area and your contact information?
Yeah, you can check the website, combatstudiesgroup.blogspot.com, or just do a search for it. And my calendar, there's a tab that has my calendar on it, which should be updated on a pretty regular basis. So right now I'm all over the country. So more than likely there's going to be training near you. If not, you can reach out to me and we can get something set up in your area. So too easy.
Outstanding. And your contact information is right there on that website. Multiple ways to contact you. And, yeah, this is really good stuff. So I'm looking forward to seeing you in Tennessee in April. And, I'm sure we'll be in touch between now and then. So Codename K, Combat Studies Group, thank you for being with us on Radio Free Redoubt.
Thanks, man. Have a good one.